434-1790. You can also reach us at 266-4862. The WhatsApp message says, please help me with this situation. My banking day is today. I went to a financial institution which informed me that I can only transact business today if the first letter of my business name corresponds to any of the letters assigned for today. Unfortunately, it is not so. So I wasn't allowed to do my banking. Yeah, there's somebody who had sent a question about that earlier because their business does not carry the same name as their last name. And therefore, the banking days was a bit of a challenge. They could do personal banking, but apparently they weren't allowed to do banking for their business. And that is a bit of a challenge. I don't know whether the ministry, the Attorney General's office, will have to adjust that or whether it's left up again to the interpretation of the banks. I know Maurice, for example, his name is Maurice Norville, but I know he has something called Greenback Possibilities. No, unless N and G is on the same day, if he has a check, I wonder if that's Maurice, who has a check for Greenback Possibilities, he can have a bit of a challenge. I see Michelle smiling. I don't know what's the name of her business. I do, but I won't tell that. All right. Brass Tax, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Danny.
Hi, good afternoon, sir.
Welcome back.
Let me say, it's good to be back at the wicket until I get hit.
Of course. I enjoyed your Mayday program.
Why, thank you, sir.
It was leisurely and a good pace, and you started off.
You started on the good off foot?
In a fine fashion.
Yes,
now,
sir.
I'm going to be like our friend Raul. Mr.
Relentless.
Mr. Relentless. Correct. I call him now Mr. Incessant. And I'm going to call relentlessly again and again for the SSA or something to be done for the SSA worker. They are the most minimal of all the frontline workers in terms of protection. I don't know how a union delegate, a union head honcho, a board member could drive behind or even see these fellas come to collect up the garbage and don't see that they are short. They are short in visors. That's one. They are short in the overall. They are short, as far as I know, with having fresh water on the inside of the vehicle to freshen themselves up. They are short in terms of a real good scrub, a real good germicidal scrub, specially formulated, Mr. Johnson. I don't think, although I cannot see, I don't think they have inner latex gloves on their hands on the inside. The reason for me saying this is the very nature of how they ride on the truck. The very nature on how the bags, the garbage is collected in plastic bags, which must pop upon compression. The mere fact that they have to be taking up garbage from household, clinics, nursing homes.
And they are injured. They are injured from time to time. They are injured from time to time by what we put in there. Some people dispose of needles. Some people put feces from the animals and all sorts of things in there.
Yes,
they are under severe stress.
And what reinforces my call is, but it is not surprising to discover, because as the natural route of elimination of protein and viruses are protein, is that they've found now viral presence in sewers in Holland. And they're carrying out research on it. To the extent that they're saying they can, from the titration of the protein in it, the RNA, they can tell if a particular district or housing development has been cleared of COVID. Right? I drew up a resolution the day that you were on to read, and I mean, this is really concerning. The other thing which I heard you raise on Monday, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. The price gouging and that you were having no
medication. But, right, yeah. Of your alley.
Right. No.
Notice I did not say price gouging. The term around, I know there are things that you got to take into consideration. Yes, sir.
I think you were on the right track. No, okay. I am not a pharmacist. I don't own a pharmacy.
Right.
I studied medicinal
your
chemistry
business.
And mm-hmm. biochemistry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In other words, the engineering of pharmaceuticals, how you put together a pharmaceutical to beat the same problems now as would be arising from time to time with the virus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's the scarcity of the commodity.
Mm-hmm.
You thought one time China was down and the Western world was up. And now they're up, the other one down. Air freight. When you air freight, expect to multiply 4 to 5 times. There was a time when you could order. You could sit here, because I worked for both European and American companies.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time you could have sent off your request, and you get it as requested, even if they put 6. But no, there's something now for years called a minimum order.
Right.
Then there's scarcity of labor, which is going to interfere with the chain supply. As I said, there's minimum packaging. Then there's urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, and I think I could say it openly, because I've known friends who could not get air ventilating. Why? Because the disease is one, as you know, Mr. Johnson, which hits the lungs early as well.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you have to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think come July, and when they say that there may be a second spin, because the opportunistic thing about this thing is it is phasic, so I could see the phase coming across,
mm-hmm.
and it is cyclical.
So you could get
it
again.
Another
wave. So let me add quickly, sir, that I did say on that date, I mentioned it during the course of what I was talking about, that I have to be careful when I talk about my pharmaceutical friends because there's so few of them that they get targeted. For example, the vials that you put pills into.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Something that most pharmacists would have to just factor into their costs.
Right.
They wanted to bring some in.
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking about how much they would pay for the vials.
Right.
But the company that does the bringing in, you know, the DHLs and those people.
Yeah.
Said to them, the freighters, because of the current environment, it would cost them $25,000 to bring it here.
Yep.
No, we're not talking about the cost of the item itself. We're talking about the cost of the transportation.
Yep.
And I said to the person, but if you have to pay $25,000, you're getting the plane with it? Because I can't see you giving the old lady or me 4 vials to take home that we're going to throw away.
Right.
And you're paying $25,000 to bring it here. It will cripple you. So I know there are charges like that, that the average, and this is why I said to them, it's going to be difficult for you in your environment for a while.
Yeah.
Because if I'm accustomed getting whatever I come to you for, at let's say $30 or $40, and you suddenly tell me, Dennis, that's $150.
Right.
I can say, you're checking out my eye.
You see what I tell you? Multiply by 4.
Well, I'm glad you said multiply by 4, so now I know how to multiply it, yeah.
Yes, and when it comes, and I'm going to be honest with you, it ain't hoarding or anything, Mr. Johnson, Dennis. It is looking after yourself. When you see mid-year come, and you could hold enough to tidy over for 3 months.
You do that.
And you pay, and don't think about it. Something else I heard you mention this morning, the flip-flopping of statements early in the origin of the virus, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we had flip-flopping from the head honcho of the WHO.
Yeah.
He dragged his feet. He made some statements which were unscientific. And then I listened to interviews with Mr. Ryan, and he was what the late Dipper Barr used to call Dixie Doodling. Then you had the worst of all was the Surgeon General in America. He made me feel shame. Up to now, he is still trying to defend not wearing a mask. The first person he saw wearing a mask was in the week of February in Barbados at the corner of Country Road, a fellow doing like delivery. And people were passing and pointing and laughing.
And laughing.
But you got to think, Mr. Johnson. Science is about thinking, not joining the bandwagon. And the fella, I said to myself, look, this fella is on the right track. But there's something I want you to pick up later on. Not now. I like to give everybody a little time. Mm-hmm. And then for the long run.
Okay.
The thing I want you... No, I want to give everybody a chance. Mm-hmm. Something called comorbidity. Every other word now is... They tell me every word now with the corona, COVID, comorbidity. Everything beginning with a C.
It's a co.
And I see it being used in certain areas as a sort of a euphemistic way of saying, Mom, you didn't expect that body to live.
To live long, yeah.
To live long.
Yeah.
And but they have to get down deep, especially in places like America, where people get their seasonal shot. People go, my sister who was in England, God rest her, every year after she passed a certain age, she made sure she got the flu shot for that year. And then, later on, like another 2 years, the pneumonia shot. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have people in certain societies, like in America, if you don't have the wherewithal, if your job exposes you to any contagion by virtue of your profession, you don't have the money, you don't have the insurance, pray tell me, you... And there's something, I'm not going to say it openly, that we blacks don't like taking injection. Only yesterday somebody stopped and asked me about a conspiracy theory and asked me, but Ilie, you going to take the vaccine? I said, even before it gets here, I want one.
I know my brother's afraid of needles, and when he asks me why I'm not afraid of needles, I tell him because I am a little, and I use that word I can't use on the radio right now.
Yeah. But
yeah, but let me, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say to you is
sorry
this.
Arresting.
No. What I was going to say to you is this. I don't think we can determine who lives or who dies or when.
No.
There are some people who have fought conditions for years. People who have been diagnosed with cancer for 20 years, and they're told you have X time, and they still with us.
Others, my mother has been diagnosed over 30 years.
Correct.
And she's still living.
Right. And there are some of us who, you know, say, well, you know, there ain't nothing wrong, nothing serious with you, and tomorrow morning we're not here.
That's so right.
This, you know, if you're over a certain age and if you have a predisposition to certain...
Or an underlying condition.
Yeah.
A much softer term.
Yeah, well, as I said to someone who asked me if I was working from home or coming to work, I said, well, I can't produce from home, so I have to be here. I said, but it's kind of strange. I am over 60. I have a pre-existing condition. I should be home sitting down. Because <That's right. laughs> I am in that bracket of could die any time. So, but... The truth is that we can't predict that. So the other thing is, I don't know, someone with medical training said to me once, I can't tell you have a headache or you don't. I could say I can find no medical reason for your headache, but I can't tell you don't have one. So I smiled at that when he said that. So
the other term which now is growing is something called an immunity passport.
Yeah, I saw that one.
The only passport you could get now, Mr. Johnson, is a passport saying that Dennis Johnson, David Gill, has been a recipient of a vaccine. And I see the Minister of Tourism has come around to saying it, because I picked him up on it 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Come around to saying it. And that, just as how you would know, because your relatives went to England in the early days, you couldn't set foot in England without a letter from, let's say, a more stating.
You used to have a vaccination certificate to go with your travel documents.
That is right.
I remember that in the 1960s, certainly so.
Now the shoe has been put on the other foot. We got to tell them the only way you come down here to get this sunshine is if you carry that certificate. So the quotation I had for you is, they say that this COVID is the diagnostic dye. Okay, that shows up the crack. in the structure. And I will go on to say it's the Doppler radar, and that will show the depth of the crack. And the other one is, Mr. Johnson, you better believe it or not, we have to fit our time into the timetable of the virus. I'll hear you soon.
I hope we talk again, sir. Good hearing you. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon.
It's good to hear your voice. Do you have any update on how they're paying pensions this time?
No, I have not. We asked the question earlier because we got a couple messages about it, but I have received no response on the issue of pensions.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
No problem, ma'am. I have a message here that I really have to share. It says, can businesses walk into a bank and do business? Some people just don't use basic common sense. If you have a business, I don't see why you should be denied the opportunity to conduct your business. Why would you have to go out again and expose yourself to contracting the virus to return to do banking because of your business name? And the other question that was posed in the other direction from somebody was, if my last name does not correspond, the initial does not correspond with the name of my business, can I tell the police when I'm out on the road I'm doing business for my business and not for me personally? So therefore, they should look for the K of my business name as opposed to the D of my last name. This managing this is interesting. Dennis, commercial deposits are not subject to names at CIBC, my bank, says somebody who just put a nice little plug in there for CIB, which is, comes back to what I was saying, banks being allowed to interpret things or people interpreting things in their own way. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Glad to welcome you back.
It's good to be back.
Early in the week.
It's good to be back.
Bless you and keep you and all who are healing in any way this day. Yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
I want to ask you what you think about this. It is the World Bank that has put this half over the barrel again.
EU, the European Union.
But last year or year before, they didn't do that, and then we got it rescinded.
Ma'am, they keep shifting. They keep shifting the reasons for. Let me say, keep shifting the goalposts. This time is that anti-money laundering laws are not strong enough. The last time it was something else, and the time before that it was something else again. It is unfortunate. Someone made a comment, I think it was to Peter or to David earlier, that when you access funds from international agencies, they have you across a barrel and they can change what they call the conditionalities. The truth is that I think in this current environment, there are nations trying to readjust their economies, and they're finding various ways to do so. And if it means squeezing somebody else, well, it means squeezing somebody else. They're trying to get their businesses back within their borders. They're trying to get as much taxes from them as possible. And they're rewriting the rules as they go along. And unfortunately, we're not at the table writing the rules.
So how many other West Indies islands is in there? You have a list?
Bermuda is included, I know for sure. If I pull up my email, because I did, let me see, I should have it on my phone because I did send it to my daughter for a comment from her when I saw it last night. So I should have it here with me still. Let me see if I can pull it up for you. I may have to squint my eyes a little bit, but here we go. Barbados, Botswana, Cambodia, Ghana, Jamaica, Mongolia, Myanmar, Nicaragua, and Zimbabwe. Those are the nations that I see here. Let me make sure I may miss anybody. In alphabetic order, Barbados, Botswana, Cambodia, Ghana, Jamaica, Mongolia, Myanmar, Nicaragua, and Zimbabwe. That's some of the people on the list. And it says the EU says, I'm trying to see if I got the reason here. those countries, nine countries on the list, pose a financial risk to the EU. Oh yeah, Panama and the Bahamas too. Mauritius, because their anti-money laundering and terrorism financing shortfalls, there are shortfalls in their laws on anti-money laundering and terrorism financing.
Mm-hmm. And Barbados, Bahamas, and these, as I would say, when I look at a map of the world and our economies, can we really hurt them?
They think we can. Let me put it that way. You see, one, I know there's a gentleman who takes me to task a lot on the question of a national bank. And I heard him talking to David because I was producing the program. And one of the reasons I said that if we start up a national bank or co-banking, going to run into problems, is because on a number of occasions, as I said, these international agencies find a way to try to put the harness on us. So if Barbados decided it was going to start a national bank, financed by Barbadians, totally financed by Barbadians, that we suddenly said we had 2 billion Barbados dollars, not US, Barbados dollars in deposits. And in order to get interest on that $2 billion, we want to invest it in various things so we could get a return, so we could pay our people who bank with us, let's say a minimum of 2%, because we want to make it more attractive than the 0.05%. We wanted to pay them 2% interest. So we want to put our money, this $2 billion Barbados dollars, where it could gain us at least 8 or 7% interest so we could pay our people 2%. You know the first thing they ask us? Where you get $2 billion Barbados dollars from when your economy is struggling and you claim you come out of 10 years in the wilderness and you're borrowing money from us? Where you get $2 billion from? Where does money come from? Oh, you're growing weed. Well, that's a narcotic, and we're growing it here as hemp to make pharmaceuticals, but down there, one is smoking it. So that's weed, and it's illegal. You see how you see the twist, right? You see my twist? You understand what I just said to you, right?
Of course.
Good. The same product, the same product, but by a different name, they have now blacklisted you because you made $2 billion from selling weed, whereas we're making $15 billion from hemp and cannabis to make pharmaceuticals to sell to you so that you could put the pill and the tea and the other things. That's how it works.
We're in the middle of everything, and it seems as if there's no freedom left, right, not center. They talk about independence and all that. I think that we have to go on, and honestly, if who don't believe in God is going to see that by faith, and faith alone, we would have to survive. And before, like yesterday, we should have been planting our own crops and so on, because we don't even know what's going to happen food-wise later on.
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult because
we need to
shortages
right away.
And the getting the produce here with airlines shutting down and selling their planes and boats not moving, like the previous caller said, it's going to cost more to bring in your necessities.
So the West Indian Islands, we need to actually, if there was a time that we need to actually look into actually getting together, not only for food, but our economic situation. It is now, though.
But we don't trust each other, ma'am.
But we will see what will happen.
We had 33 Trinidadians here that Trinidad don't know how to take back. You could imagine that. 33 Trinidadians with Trinidadian passports sitting down in Barbados that Trinidad say, all borders locked and coming back. It is unfortunate.
We got to get together, really. And do something. We can't just leave it up in the air like that.
Yeah, but you know, ma'am, and the other thing is, if we're depending on their planes, if we're depending... All right, let's take Liat, for example. Some of Liat's planes are leased. They're leased from a foreign entity. I don't know what the lease conditions are, but while the cost of fuel may go down, while fewer people are traveling, and you may want to reduce the cost of travel, if they're going to pay the same amount for the lease of the planes in US dollars, They're going to make that money somewhere. So we don't own, we don't, ma'am, we don't own some of the most necessary things we need for our survival.
Do we need some of what we think is necessary? We don't got to decide, because life is more important than a lot of things we think we need. Life itself, minutes of life in this country. And yep. We need to get food first, all right?
Yep.
Hey, thank you.
Yep. Ma'am, I totally agree with you, and that's why I made the comment earlier again that if we have persons who worked in the hospitality industry who are cooks, who know how to design menus that are healthy and not costly, this is the time you come to the aid of your brothers and sisters. This is what you can do in a pandemic, in the situation that we're in, to make life more bearable for people who think that they have to depend only on fast food restaurants to live. People who say, I tired eat potato and sardines. I tired eat rice and corned beef, like the good gentleman at the army said recently. This is the time for them to say, look, here's what you can prepare. It may look like you're struggling, but this is what you can do to give yourself a healthy meal. This is what it may cost you. And here's how you can make something to sustain yourself in the current environment. Even if they could cook it themselves and sell it. There are people who wouldn't buy. I understand that. But there are others who would need that. And maybe we'll get through it together. Brastax, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Jay.
What's up?
How are you, sir?
I am good. I hope you're surviving.
I survive in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Hold on to them, then.
Yes, please. I heard you said something there just now. You said you're 60 years.
I'm over 60.
You're over 60 years.
Yeah.
But look, you hang in there. You hang in there. If you make that jump before 67, you'd be like me. You can tell you hold on to 67, so don't make that jump. If God live, you can work to 67, you do it, but don't go on.
Not for this company, sir. I keep telling people, be careful about that. The government The government will pay me a pension at age 67. This company says I got to get out at 65. So for 2 years, I got to swim on my own. I got to beg David for a pick.
Okay, that's the same thing. What I call you for, the frontline workers.
Right.
I don't know if you were here in 1976 when the late Tom Adams won that election.
I was in 70...
You were in here in 76?
No, I left in 75. I came back in 81. So I was out in 76.
In 76 then, after you won the election, you were living just below me in Walker's in St. George. I think it was in between the law court and thing, but most people know that he was living here in St. George by me. And he used to go to the beach every morning, very, very early, very early. And he lived the beach and he come up here, some people call it Ellerton Bay, the court, and collect his maid, the servant, the woman that used to cook for him. Can't remember her name, but I think I see her now. Okay. Mr. Adams said the first person he see on the road, that was when he going to the sea, was a transport board worker and a sanitation worker. Good. I sit down here, I watch it on the different Facebook and these kind of things, and the television, the papers, everybody beating pan, blowing whistle, the doctors, the nurses, everybody. I don't do anything for transport board workers, but I can tell you why. I had a piece of it too. I was the first on the road and the last on the road. I haven't heard nothing for transport board workers and their frontline workers too. So it looked to me, I feel like I had to do my own thing, gather the past, present, and future transport board workers, let me go down there, get a pan, a hole, a basin, something to buck pot, and keep noise and honor them and give them gratitude. You think that could be done, or let the system do it?
Sir, people show their gratitude in different ways. And public recognition is one way that the frontline workers have received some little fillip. There was initiative to applaud. I don't like using the word clap because of connotations attached to that word in the past. So when they called it clap, Barbados, I raised my eyebrows and go, whoa, things have changed. Certainly they have, haven't they? Anyway, so a round of applause throughout neighborhoods for people who perhaps didn't hear it, but at least it showed
that we
appreciate some banged pots and pans. Those things, sometimes just being kind or telling somebody, you know, I appreciate you. You pass and you see somebody weeding the side of the road or doing something like that and you give them a thumbs up. Helps them to, you know, feel that somebody's looking out for them. But appreciation from the public for what you do, sir, is always, always a good thing. Always a good thing. Getting off a bus and telling the driver thanks for bringing me safely to my job every morning is a good thing. You know, and if it makes us be more hospitable to our people, I am all for it.
So thanks for giving me a hearing. I hope the public will come out and give up. But I still there.
I know this.
I go down the road, I see a transport board, but they might even ride and I walk in. I might drive us here at me and sometimes put the boys through the bus, but they can't do it, you know? I see that they should be, you know, recognized too.
Yes, sir. No problem. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Dennis, good afternoon. How are you?
I am all right, sir. How are you?
I'm still here. Like a young lady asked me, Mom, how are you? It's as sweet, as ever.
You could work yet? Or are you
I can't work yet. They still got me tied down.
Okay. Just
until
checking.
The 18th or so. And on that subject, I need to ask all those persons, because I saw a lady this morning driving, coming up Black Rock Road, and this guy was giving her, I believe, lessons for the vehicle. I don't know, it's a private vehicle. It's not any of the guys that I know from the association or the driving school section. So I said, wow, now look at that. They shouldn't be doing it, whoever you are. And I don't think any of my guys out there doing it, because I've had discussions with many of them. And on that subject, too, I want to know from you, if you think it is wise that a person doing a driver's test should be doing that test without dual controls in the vehicle.
I don't think so, because it's a little dangerous for various reasons. If you have a student who has a spasm attack, who may have some issue, you need to have somebody to be able to take control before you injure or kill all the people in the vehicle.
Now, we cannot teach anybody to drive unless the vehicle cannot get insurance unless it has dual control. Let me explain. So many things happen regularly. Dennis, when you go to an exam room, aren't you nervous? Even if you know everything, are you nervous?
So I don't like exams at all for that reason.
99.9% of us who go into exam room, even if it's only to pass an exam to cut cane, is getting nervous.
If you ask the testing officers in the pine that I have spoken to, they would tell you that I've said to them openly, I don't like exams at all. I just don't like the word fail. So it's put me in a very strange kind of thing.
Nobody likes to fail. So therefore, not wanting to fail, it's bothering me now because they had phone calls during the past 2 days about this thing. But some particular test officer, along with some other discussion with people, telling them that when we come back out to work, we got to take out the dual control. Sir, a few days before we come off the road.
But can they say so, or is there a law governing it?
There's no law governing it, but they want them. They claim, now listen, Dennis, if I am in the left side driver's seat, you're the learner, you're on a test, the man in the back seat, you want to tell me he's not company enough to know if you interfere with the brake pedal? He would know the sound of the vehicle changes. You would hear the student would sit behind the accelerator. He would know at any time that the instructor interferes with it, it automatically fails the test. It's automatic. They tell you that. So I don't know where. That is for safety. A student come down for nominals roundabout to make the left turn, but unlock it. I mean, the student turned it. The girl went into one gear and straight up on gas. The instructor had to master brake. You know, end up right onto the guy has a machine, a mixer right there in the corner. And the bumper end up on the mixer. It had not for him. With the dual control, that vehicle would hit. And we got one particular driving instructor who insists that some people he's getting in the front seat, others he's sitting in the back. And when you ask him if he's going to stop the vehicle, for any, he said, I'm a job. So suppose he's going to run, we're going to shoot him up on gas.
He will grab the, I am going to die handle on the, you know where you're supposed to. I'm not. Yep. So, to tell you the truth,
everybody's got nerves. Some of us can handle it better than some of us.
So it's not only that, okay? It's not only that. There's something called panic, and yes, people do strange things at times. As someone who's had to sit in the passenger seat with new drivers.
Before we have another one, a very, very important one to say, but before you go.
Sitting in the front seat with new drivers, I can't tell you how much time I mash brakes, and I don't have any dual control, okay? So I see Michelle nodding. It's parenting sometimes, but anyhow.
It's frightening. I will have to get out of that business, so I ain't sitting in a back seat, and I learn to drive upon a test, and the driving test, and I'll sit in the front seat, because if that student makes a mistake, that vehicle, going down Rendezvous Hill on a truck, I can bring the example, I can bring the name of the student, the name of the instructor, the name of the test, and also, with 3 points, somebody turns from the truck, the student pushing the clutch, and the he had to go break a clutch and hold it, and go down the hill. If not, the three of them and the truck, maybe whoever else would have died, they don't understand what happened. These things happen. It is dangerous. And I will get out of it, guys. If that can happen, let me tell you what I call you about. This morning, I went to a particular big hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And I was behind two persons. The guy has to be between 68, 70, 71. Because he was so vexed he took off the mask. Today is his shopping day. He waited the past 2 days, because he couldn't do it Saturday or Sunday. Saturday evening, he said, it's his evening shopping day. And the evening they closed. So therefore, he come this morning, Wednesday, which is his shopping day, to get some items. The guy said, okay, you're going. He said, this guy with me. He said, no, he can't go to this town. He's shopping there, right? He said, no. He said, but he is who going to pick out the things. This is my plumber and whatever. Something, I think he said plumber. Mm-hmm. He have to pick out the things that he want, because they don't know what he want. But he can't come here. He got ripped, but he's shopping there. And Dennis, I felt so bad. I wish I was able then to read in the man's head what he want, that he could go and get it. I said, but boss, If the man only going to pick out the things, we told him can't go, one go, go. But the man can't go now because he doesn't have the nice shopping there.
Yeah.
You understand how it is? I think somebody, this is where you need discretion.
You can't have discretion with the law here. The law is the law. You should know that.
Well, you understand, Dennis? The law is the law. But if you get where I'm coming from, in a case like this, this should not have been even an issue. Two people arguing or three people arguing, this should be an issue. All right, okay. Supervisor, this gentleman here is old. He needs to get some things, but this guy's going to pick them out for him. I don't think that should be hard. You ought to see a guard and a guy at the door making a big noise. And I fell for him.
A guard. A guard in the United States got shot for telling somebody they can't go in here. So, yep, there are people taking some strange action because of people using or not using what you call their discretion. Good to hear you, buddy. Take care. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Are you on, Dennis?
You are.
Good. I'm glad to hear you. I got two things here that I want to talk to you about.
Good.
Most people that was tuning in to Brady, Miss Bashaw, and Mia Mark, the Prime Minister, them don't really understand that these two women came back off of dealing with their health and come back to the public right away, jump right back in the fray. Most people don't understand this.
They think they should relax.
You understand? And they're doing an outstanding job. So far, so good. But another thing that I got to talk to you about is one thing that you start with a passion that most people ain't come back to talk about at all. That was when Friday, when you came on and your preamble was dealing with a subject. You raise it up and you screw it in like how you used to get, with ears ring when we did little children. Since then, I didn't hear nobody raise that topic at all. That's the touching it with a 20-foot pole. Nobody won't go into some of the details of what happened here in the hotel industry, and that's one of the passions I know that you worked in and you speak about with so much high authority, and I work in that industry as well. and the way how you handled the situation was very articulate, but nobody said nothing about it. The couple of names that you spoke about never came on and said nothing about it. I was trying to get on to you since Friday, and up to today, nobody spoke about the issue pertaining to what is happening at some of the hotels across here in Barbados. We do have chefs go to Miami on numerous occasions to deal with the competition and things, and we come back victorious. But yet still, we don't have an executive chef or executive sous chef that is Beijing at all. These people that come into Barbados and got all sorts of cooking experience not dealing with the Barbados cuisine or nothing at all. And that's why most of the guests that come here to Barbados like to get the local cuisine. But they have to go to the vans outside the hotels and buy local cuisine. guests eat macaroni and cheese in America when they come here to get macaroni pie. And that's one of the hot servings that guests comes out and on various hotels across the landscape of Barbados and eat. They don't get split peas. They've got enough things that the hotels could do, but they don't do. Or just dealing with European style of cooking. Wherever guests left Europe to come down to Barbados, you don't want the European food.
Well, there was a gentleman yesterday talking to Peter Wickham who said that he wanted to do a special type of menu at a hotel he was working at.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was told no, people want an away-from-home experience, so they needed a European-style cuisine in their kitchen. So the truth is that perhaps sometimes people outside of our country appreciate what we do more than those of us here. And it is unfortunate when, because of the dictates of the executive chefs or the hotel management or whomever, the local grown foods and the local taste, let's call it the taste of Barbados that we like to say, tell people to get, can't be had at the hotel. Now, it could be a good thing if it's not an all-inclusive property and the person has the opportunity to dine around. So which means, and even if it's all-inclusive, if as part of the package you say, look, we provide three meals at the hotel for you, and we provide three meals outside of the hotel for you. Still in your all-paid-for package, but it gives you a chance to spread your taste buds a little bit and enjoy a couple things. Now, I mean, I would not perhaps want to indulge in certain things, but there are other people who like to, you know, explore. It is unfortunate because it means that, one, your local produce won't get sold. It's good that you're drinking the local rum. At least we'll sell you that. It's good that perhaps you're using the pepper sauce. I know they like pepper sauce, so you can get that sold.
The pepper sauce.
They might take back some with them too, so you can get that exported. But to have an experience, when you go anywhere on vacation and you come back, one of the things people would ask you is, so you had a good time? And if you could tell them, yes, I ate this and I enjoy it, or I tasted that and it was nice, and I remember dining at so-and-so and we had a good time, that's word of mouth advertising that you can't pay for.
You got that right.
Right? So there are things like that that we need to factor in when we talk about expanding our hotel product, expanding what we offer our visitor. Because the tourism industry supports so much more than just the people who work in the direct line. And we can't say just give it up, because a lot of people can die. A lot of people will die. Unnecessarily.
I travel extensively because I work in the cruise ship industry.
Okay.
And I was all over the world. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that I saw in France and Italy and Paris, you understand? How cutters in let's call it, you have cutters in the cases in France and stuff, that shocked me because I thought that was only a Beijing thing. And I saw here in Barbados with my own two eyes, the last when they had the Taste of Barbados, where pudding and sauce was on the menu, where two guests came to a particular bar in town and had pudding and sauce with wine. Mm. I saw that with my own two eyes. I see where it might laugh, but that's what I saw with my own two eyes.
So you believe that they got Bajans who was leaving and going and cook overseas and won't take the Bajan food with them?
That happens all the time. Got Bajans that gone overseas and doing a rare cooking for guests and for locals.
Yeah.
Because when they intermingle, they want the Bajan delicacies.
Correct.
And on certain nights, in the cruise industry, they have Caribbean night,
mm-hmm.
where Caribbean delicacies are served.
Yeah. And sometimes not done our way either.
Pardon?
Sometimes it's done our way because the chef knows our way, and sometimes he's teaching somebody how to do it.
Yes, because they've got enough Caribbean chefs that work
on the ships. Yeah.
And Barbados too. Yeah. I was one of them. Mm-hmm. So you know what I'm speaking about. You understand? But yet still, when on certain, like on Christmas, where the split peas and rice and baked chicken and things, mm-hmm. that don't get served in hotels, you know. And the guests like to experience that, but that don't get served. I saw from my eyes, I want to get it. They had guests in the hotel, people from America, colored people, as they like to say, mm-hmm. that pots and dishes went into the hotel. And that was a shock. a family of the people that were staying in the hotel had to carry beers and delicacies in the hotel. Well, if you're cooking if you got guests at a particular time of the year or what, serve the beers and delicacies.
So I could tell you that in certain restaurants overseas, managed by Caribbean people, they got one menu for the people who was paid to sit down outside. I got another menu for the people who's come and sit around by the side and have a chat with them. So it depends on how well you know the restaurateur. Thank you, Michelle, for keeping me in the safe and narrow. And for those who I have not pleased with my chitter-chatter and my little side remarks today, I do apologize. But you have to bear with me tomorrow again because I'm back in the chair tomorrow. And I think John will be taking care of things technical then. For those who sent messages, called, or just listened, on behalf of our team, have a good afternoon. The birthday boy is up next. Greetings from all and sundry already pouring in for the gentleman who follows me. Boy, when you're in VOB country, you can't even have a birthday in peace.